Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hey fans, Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, your host of the podcast. For those who don't know me, I'm a registered dietitian, board certified specialist in sports dietetics, an athlete, a mother, and I'm here today to share all good things about female athlete nutrition with our guest today, Stephanie Flippin. Stephanie is a professional trail and road ultra runner for Lululemon and Goo Energy Labs. She's a board certified physician and surgeon, as well as a consultant for amateur all the way up to professional level athletes. Stephanie is an endurance coach guiding athletes from the mile up to 200 mile and multi-day events. She has coached hundreds of diverse athletes with an emphasis on process-oriented goals and uplifting the athlete at every stage of the journey. Stephanie is also a monthly columnist for Trail Runner magazine, bringing coaching guidance with a side of medical and scientific background, and a freelance writer. She's the 2021 USA Track and Field 100-mile national champion and has run 3 of the 10 fastest 100-mile North American times ever. Wow, you just kind of have to let that sink in for a little bit. Wow, that's a big deal. Stephanie is also the co-host and co-founder of the Making Strides podcast. Stephanie is passionate about making diversity and inclusivity a pillar in athletics and not just a box to check. As with most athletes and runners, we are more than just athletes. And so my conversation with Stephanie started out focusing actually on her medical career and the fact that she was a surgeon. And then we kind of talk about how that expertise and her knowledge of the body and injury prevention and things like that has really helped her as she then pursued this running career, and which is what she's now invested in full time. So that's just a great journey that we're going to dive into. And another really unique thing about Stephanie is that she is a vegan athlete. So we talk a lot about that because I find that amazing and wonderful and fascinating. I myself am not vegan, nor do I claim to be plant-based on any sense of that word, though I love plants and want to eat all types of plants and more plants. It was great, though, because I'm the type of dietitian that I want to respect all the different types and ways of eating and really respect the fact that nutrition is individualized. Does this work for your diet, lifestyle, for your goals, for your health, for your athletics? In Stephanie's life, being vegan is absolutely working for her. And I love that we can show that you can be an athlete at a high level and be vegan. And we're going to talk about some things that are working for her. At the same time, it doesn't work for everybody, because you'll hear in this conversation, you know, just how much knowledge Stephanie has, how much time it's taken her, how much experience she has had to have in the kitchen to get to this point. And so I just want to say that, because I've also worked with a lot of clients, especially I'll just say this, maybe the younger clients that don't even really have great cooking experience yet, or maybe in high school and dependent on their family who isn't plant-based, or in college and we're eating out of the dining halls and dorm rooms, where this might not be the time in your life to be plant-based or vegan if it's that difficult. And you might be able to make it work, okay? Individualized nutrition here, individualized scenarios, what works for you. But I've had many clients that we've had to shift away from being a vegan lifestyle to then, hey, we need to eat some yogurt or some eggs just to get some good protein and some good calories, because they were really limiting themselves. at the same time, I've also had clients like Stephanie who are making it work for them. I have an active client right now who's just doing amazing, not only in her athletic journey, but actually recovering from REDS and maintaining a menstrual cycle after years without it while being 100% vegan. So it's different for everybody. And so that's why I liked this episode with Stephanie, because we showed the side of how it can work, but you'll also hear that, you know, she's very knowledgeable about it. So I hope you enjoy it. If you're interested in vegan or plant-based diets, I think, you know, look to Stephanie. She's not a dietitian, but she's medically knowledgeable. She's got the hands-on experience and she is an elite athlete. So she's somebody that I think is inspiring in this regard. And for somebody like me, who I am not able or willing, I should say, at this point in my life, I'm not wanting to be vegan, but I love exploring vegan recipes and more plant-based recipes. I actually did a completely plant-based meal last night. I made a tofu veggie curry over rice. And a couple nights ago, I did a pasta with lentils and a bunch of veggies in there. And that was plant-based as well. So, you know, you don't have to be vegan to incorporate more plant-based meals into your diet. And that even might be just a place to start. If you're like, ooh, that sounds interesting, but I'm not sure that I'm ready to do that all the way, that could be a place to start. Explore some recipes. Well, anyways, I'm going on way too long here. You want to hear the episode, don't you? So let's get to the episode with Stephanie and hear her talk. And I also want to remind you that in order to keep this episode going, we do really appreciate people who donate monthly to the Female Athlete Nutrition Patreon. Head to www.patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to give us a monthly donation of $1 or $10 to keep this podcast going. We also appreciate if you are interested in taking any food products or supplements that we do recommend by using our discount codes that we are affiliates for. And on the topic of plant-based diets, I want to give a huge shout out to Prevenex for providing clinically tested nutritional supplements to help people live healthier, more active lives. They have many different types of supplements, multivitamins, immune health, omega plus, probiotics. They also do have a plant-based nutritional powder. It's called Nurify Plus, coming in both vanilla and chocolate flavor. And not only does it contain protein, like a protein powder, but what I love about this is it actually contains a lot of stuff. It's got carbohydrates. It's got fats in it. It's got vitamins and minerals and amino acids. So some people call these meal replacement shakes. Prevenex understands that 110 calories is not a meal, but it's that concept that, ooh, it's got a little bit of everything. So take one scoop, take two scoops, take three scoops, whatever you need. Add it to your plant-based milk. Add it to your plant-based smoothie. Whatever you need to make this work into your lifestyle, this is a great vegan option for a nutritional supplement to get more nutrients into your body. And you can use our code RISEUP. Pretty simple to follow. RISEUP, RISEUP, at Prevenex for 15% off. Head to Prevenex.com, PREVINEX, Prevenex.com for your Nurify Plus vanilla or chocolate plant-based and vegan supplement. Enjoy the episode with Stephanie. All right, fans, I'm here with Dr. Stephanie Flippin. She is a professional trail and road ultra runner for Lululemon and Goo Energy Labs. She is board certified physician and surgeon, as well as a consultant to amateur to professional level athletes. Stephanie is an endurance coach, guiding athletes from the mile up to 200 mile and multi-day events. She has coached hundreds of diverse athletes with an emphasis on process-oriented goals and uplifting the athlete at every stage of the journey. Stephanie is also a monthly columnist for Trail Runner magazine, bringing coaching guidance with a side of medical and scientific background, and a freelance writer. She is the 2021 USATF 100-mile national champion and has run three of the 10 fastest 100-mile North American times ever. Stephanie is also the co-host and co-founder of the Making Strides podcast, and she's passionate about making diversity and inclusivity a pillar in athletics and not just a box to check. Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on my podcast today. We're so appreciative of your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. And I think there's, per usual with many of my guests, I'm just so impressed by all that you've accomplished and like your mission and kind of what you do. So there's so much we can talk about. But I know, and we can talk about this in a little bit, I know that career-wise, you're really putting everything into running and being a coach right now. But, you know, your background is you went to medical school, you became a surgeon. And I just kind of wanted to hear more about like your interest in medicine and surgery and just your passion to become that. And I believe you specialize in lower extremity injuries as well. I just kind of wanted to hear about that journey.
Correct. Yeah, yes. I feel like I wanted to go into medicine ever since I was like a small child. I was super, super close with my grandparents growing up. And my grandfather was actually very, very ill. He had congestive heart failure and was really on like borrowed time. So I feel like I grew up like watching my grandmother care for him, going to multiple doctor's appointments. And I just remember feeling like I had this, like anytime my grandfather was in pain, I felt his pain too. And so I feel like I learned early on that I had a really strong sense of like very true empathy. So that's, I think, like what really was my first introduction to wanting to enter medicine in general. But also just growing up, I actually was a like highly competitive ballet dancer. So I had a very strong like introduction to lower extremity health early on. So yeah, I feel like that was also what sort of brought me into the world of athletics and wanting to like be a part of that and intertwining that within my career.
As a surgeon for lower extremity injuries, was it mostly an athletic population or did you have a wide variety of patients?
Yeah, I mean, when I did my surgical residency, it was a very wide range just because I chose to do my surgical residency in Detroit, Ann Arbor area because I wanted to get the sort of most robust training possible. Mm-hmm. You know, so I ended up seeing a lot of trauma, but a lot of like elective procedures as well. And then I would say like after residency is when my own athletic career started to take off and I started to shift a little bit more focus to wanting to work with athletes.
Yeah. And what was that shift for you personally from ballet dancing to running and then ultimately ultra running?
Yeah, I would say that it was definitely like an interesting transition. But at the same time, I have grown up running. I've like been running my whole life with my dad. That was sort of his like athletic hobby. He was a collegiate athlete. So he started taking me on runs when I was like 6 or 7 years old. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that sort of in conjunction with ballet. But it's kind of funny because I vividly remember having like a very traditionally like Russian trained ballet instructor who was like, you should never run. It's like the complete opposite sort of like movement pattern that we want to be reinforcing. So it's just kind of funny the way my life has transitioned and like where it's taken me. But I really started running more my first year of medical school because I was born and raised in San Diego, California, and then I decided to go to school in Chicago. So I just sort of knew like as the stress picked up, I was so far away from family, just, you know, studying constantly, making new friends and whatnot, that I needed something very stable in my life that was a healthy habit. So yeah, that's really when I started running very consistently and got a little bit more serious about it.
And that's what running can be for so many people. I mean, yes, we need the shoes and, you know, some clothes that don't chafe, but otherwise it's a really accessible thing to do for most people that can be just a healthy habit. You know, when you need something to de-stress, something to get you outside, something to, you know, just end the workday. I think just for even somebody who's not, doesn't identify as an athlete, it's just such a good, healthy habit, like you said, to incorporate into one's life. So, and then you were phenomenal at it. And
thank you.
and it just kept progressing and progressing.
Yeah.
And kind of, I just wanted to ask you too, have you experienced, like, with your knowledge on lower extremity injuries, but then as you progress in your running, like how much is you being a doctor and specializing in like that stuff? Like, are you able to prevent your own injuries or, you know, do they still happen? Sure. What does that look like for you?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely feel like I used to say like, oh, I'm just like really fortunate, right? Like I'm really lucky like that I haven't had to deal with very many injuries over the course of my career and like life, honestly. But I had a friend a few years ago who was like, you should like like, yeah, like that luck and like fortune is certainly at play. But he reminded me, he's like, but like you also have a very like strong medical background so that anytime something does pop up, like, you know, like what you can run through and what you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I've always really respected that as well. I'm not like I've always been really proud of the fact that I don't have sort of like a disordered relationship with athletics. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing, like if I feel something and something's off, I don't ever hesitate to pull the plug and just rest for a few days. Mm-hmm. So I do think that is at play there. Like I mentioned, in conjunction with like my understanding of what's sort of safe to run through, like soft tissue things that maybe like I'm like, okay, like this is tendinous. It needs to be loaded a bit, but I just need to back off maybe like overall intensity and volume. But yeah, I would say that having that medical knowledge has been very helpful for me, though at the same time, like I'm human, I'm not a robot.
Right.
So I have been through, most recently actually over the last year, was sort of like my first time really having some significant injuries. But I've been very outspoken about the fact that, you know, I went through some significant overall life stress, like losing a very close family member, and just having the understanding that stress is stress. And for me personally, like I've just learned that my body manifests that type of like overarching grief that is just sort of inescapable, like that type of stress that you really just can't compartmentalize like at all. It's always there. My body has responded to it through physical injury. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's been a tough lesson to learn over the past year. But at the same time, I've learned so much about it. And yeah, I do feel like it's made me a much stronger healthcare provider and coach as a result.
Thank you for sharing that. So many things I want to highlight. Mm-hmm. The last point there, how psychological stress can impact physically.
Yes. Yeah. You know, very much so.
Very much. Yeah.
Yeah. I've experienced that level of stress like throughout my life, but I just think that it's been a really long time since I've really had that level of grief and like just personal stress.
Yeah.
And I think that type of turmoil like affects people in different ways. And for me, it's like my body was like, we literally can't train through this. Like we can't. Like we've tried to do that for you in the past and like we've gotten by, but we can't do that right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a very real thing.
Yeah. And I'm sorry for what you're going through and that loss.
Oh, thank you.
But I thank you for sharing that with others, because I think also sometimes when people are going through struggle, they can maybe, and I've been this, when I'm struggling, then I grasp on to like, if I just went for a run, I'd feel better. Or if I just, and I almost put more pressure on myself when that's like the exact opposite. What I actually need is like compassion and permission to rest. I experienced that recently myself. So
yeah, it can be really tough to like differentiate between like what's helpful and what's not. Yeah. And I actually just had a really like poignant conversation with an athlete about this. She's like, well, like, how do I know, you know, I'm dealing with like processing, like losing like a parent, like how do I know that it's okay for me to like push through a little bit of like discomfort and not like injury pain or, you know, or sickness or anything, but like, how do I know that my body can handle pushing through like a tougher workout? And we had a really great conversation about it, because there aren't like such clear cut signs sometimes, right? Like sometimes we don't know. Sometimes we're not in pain and like things are feeling okay, but sometimes our body is just like something's boiling underneath the surface. So yeah, just trying to figure out like what your body needs and maybe what's a little bit too much going over that line. It can be really hard.
Mm-hmm. And going back to another thing you said about like, you know, not having many injuries in your career. Oh, it's because I'm lucky. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, give yourself credit. You take care of yourself. You do.
Sure.
But also, you know, you are very educated on how to take care of yourself. And that's why I just want to say thank you for sharing your knowledge, you know, by writing articles and being a coach. You know, it's like, okay, you have the knowledge and so you can take care of yourself. And then like you're going one step further, like sharing that knowledge with other people.
Yeah.
Because I think that is so many athletes that might be experiencing injury for a variety of reasons, even just like a competition or a race that didn't go well. Sometimes it's not like they meant to. It's just they didn't know. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know better. You know, sometimes like what my work as a dietitian, you know, it still shocks me sometimes. People like don't know that they need to refuel after a workout.
Right.
They're just not doing it. They don't understand the importance of it. It's not because they just never learned. Somebody would just teach them and then they could start implementing it and practicing it and feel the difference. But, you know.
I was just going to say, I was sort of like laughing and smiling to myself because like 5 minutes before we hopped on for this recording, I had just gotten back from my run like 20 minutes prior and I was like shoveling like Greek yogurt into my mouth. I was like, you got to get this in before this recording or else I'm going to be outside that like sort of 30 minute window.
Yeah.
So I was just laughing about the irony since you are a registered sports dietitian.
Right. Right. And you had that knowledge and you knew what you had to do and you got it done despite having something on your calendar. Me and some of my clients like to say that we were late because I ate. So if you're late to a podcast recording, late to a meeting, it's because you had to eat because you know you have to, you know you have to eat. So but you weren't late actually. I was late. So a little bit more on injuries here. You had a great article I found on your website where you're a monthly columnist for Trail Runner magazine and it was about preventing injuries because, you know, there's a lot of injuries we get maybe from, well, for a variety of reasons, but it's like, well, what are the things we can do, as we were just talking about, if we have the knowledge and we practice it to prevent an injury. You had in your article, I'm just going to quote it here, the bulk of running-related injuries are classified as overuse injuries, with the majority presenting in the knee, foot, and lower leg. Things like runner's knee, IT band syndrome, tibial stress syndrome, aka shin splints, Achilles, plantar fasciitis are some of the most common. And what are some of, if you could kind of think about some of the most common reasons for these injuries that people can then try to prevent, what would some of those reasons be?
Yeah, I mean, I know that you are a registered sports dietitian and I promise I'm not like inserting this for that reason. But honestly, like one of the first conversations I have is like, what is your overall nutrition look like? Like, are you meeting your caloric and like macro micro needs for the level of activity that you're trying to put your body through? That's an important conversation that I have with patients and athletes. Mm-hmm. Other times, like the next question I ask is like, have you progressed like in an appropriate way? Or have you gone from like 0 to 30 to 40 miles per week or 30 miles per week up to 75 miles per week? What does that sort of progression in your training look like? And then probably the third most important question I ask is, what does your strength work look like? I feel like a lot of times athletes are like, well, I've been having this pain here, so I've just been like stretching it, like, and just stretching and stretching. And it's like, well, sometimes like stretching feels good and sometimes it is needed, but what does the actual strength component look like? How are we actually loading the body? So yeah, those are sort of like the three things that I start with athletes and patients.
Yeah, that's great. And yeah, as a dietitian, I would absolutely go to the nutrition question too. You know, it's, and that's going back to what you said about in the article, most running related injuries are overuse injuries. And that is, I think that combination of improper nutrition and overuse or overtraining or just even if it doesn't seem over, oh, I'm doing a perfectly acceptable amount of training, but you're doing so in an undernourished body or an improperly nourished body.
Right.
That's where those huge imbalances can happen. And the body does weird things all the way from, oh, you know, my muscles are weak and not recovering properly because I didn't get protein to like, I don't have enough calcium for my bones to even just like my form broke down because I was fatigued and then form got wonky and then injury happened.
Yeah. I mean, you're so right. Like all of the points you just made there, it just goes to show how interconnected everything is. And it usually isn't just like one single reason, right? Mm-hmm. Like I feel like oftentimes, like if someone goes to see a certain specialist, right, who gets very fixated on like, well, like, you know, your form, like you're doing this, you're kicking your leg out like on the right side more than the left. Like certainly that can be at play. But I think oftentimes it's this sort of chain reaction, right? Yeah. Like it's a great example what you just mentioned of like maybe this athlete like does have like a sort of atypical gait, but they've been relatively healthy over the course of their career. So I don't know if like that aspect of their gait is really what's like the sole contributing factor to a lower extremity injury. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, it could be like chronic underfeeling and that their form is breaking down more excessively than it needs to, like towards the end of long runs or during races. So yeah, that's, I think, just underscores just the need for a holistic approach all the time with athletes and patients.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I was thinking of that form example specifically because you are an ultra runner and it's like, yeah, the longer we go on running, the more the form is going to get a little, you know, maybe not for you, but for me, certainly it gets a little, doesn't look too good. So, you know, on the topic of properly fueling your body.
Yeah.
You actually follow a vegan diet, correct?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would love, and more so recently, you didn't necessarily grow up that way, right?
Right.
I'd love to hear more about kind of that switch in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up, I was never like a big meat eater, honestly. I just grew up with a house full of animals. Like every summer I would also volunteer at, I grew up in San Diego, like I mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I would volunteer at what used to be called the Wild Animal Park. I'm like dating myself by calling it that for those who are local to the area. It's now called like the Safari Park, but it's a huge like conservation effort there. So I grew up every summer volunteering and going to camps there and whatnot. So I think like a part of me always knew that I had ethical reasons, like why I was very like grossed out by eating meat. Mm-hmm. And I love to cook and I just never enjoyed cooking meat. It was just not fun for me. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned, I love to cook. Like if I could spend all day in the kitchen, I would. So yeah, I think in 2019, my husband and I decided to sort of go all in on a vegan diet. I remember we were driving back. My husband had just finished racing Tahoe 200-mile race around Lake Tahoe.
Beautiful.
And we were driving back. Yeah, it was so pretty. Yeah, we were driving back from Northern California back to Colorado. We were driving through states, you know, like Wyoming and whatnot, where there's a lot of like cattle ranches, farms and things. And I remember this truck full of cattle like drove past us and we just started to have a conversation about it. My husband also grew up like raising cattle down in Texas and he has a lot of like ethical reasons and also trauma from that as well. So yeah, I think we just had a really deep conversation and we're also very like passionate about doing everything we can to lower our own carbon footprints. You know, we try to stay in that sort of hopeful camp of like our own personal actions do have an impact. And it's like one person making that decision to eat and consume and purchase and invest and things like that can make a difference as that compounds with more and more people doing so.
Well, and in your case, for us, two people there, just doubled.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So for us, it was sort of a no-brainer to make that transition.
Yeah.
I do feel like it was well-timed, you know, 2019, as we know, then led into 2020. And so a sort of like a silver lining of the pandemic was that I did have more time at home to sort of like really educate myself on how to properly cook vegan as opposed to leaning on, you know, this boom that we've seen and sort of, I don't want to say junk food vegan products, but the like heavily processed stuff that's maybe not the most quote healthy per se. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like when surgery centers and hospitals were shutting down for like elective procedures and whatnot, I just had so much more time to be at home. So that kind of worked out because I really invested a large amount of time just learning how to properly fuel on a vegan diet.
Well, and I think that is such an important point to make is that it is something you have to learn. If you did, and it sounds like you were somebody who maybe wasn't eating much meat in the first place, so maybe wasn't that radical of a change, and yet it still was a learning curve.
Yeah.
And I say this for people's expectations. I have a mixed diet of all foods, but as this trend towards, for a variety of reasons, but environmental factors is one of them, health is another, performance is another, there's just a lot of talk about plant-based, plant-focused, and vegan diets over the past 5+ years. Mm-hmm. And we want people to, if they're going to go down that road, do so informed. Mm-hmm. This is a learning curve. This isn't necessarily like I can just tomorrow be vegan. I'm going to have to learn. I'm going to have to invest time in the kitchen, invest learning about different products. And, you know, it's, you can't like, you know, a vegan mac and cheese, it's a lot different. Okay. Yeah. Like you're really going to have to learn. You can't just go get a box of mac and cheese anymore to make that on your, and there's a, here's another thing. And you know more than about this than me, but in my experience as a dietitian, it's like, okay, mac and cheese is, you know, cheese and pasta. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now vegan mac and cheese can be made from a variety of things. Are you going to do like a cashew-based sauce? Are you going to do something with tofu. Nutritional yeast, tofu? Are you going to use almond milk, soy milk? You've got, you're going to use regular pasta. You're going to try and up the protein with bean-based pasta. Now, like, now mm-hmm. we've got and mac and cheese is not just mac and cheese anymore.
Right.
So it's a lot to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I really enjoy cooking. And I think that in order to really go all in on a vegan diet, you have to be excited to be in the kitchen in order to really make it sustainable mm-hmm. so that you're not just, like I said, just sort of buying like frozen products. And those products, like I still like eat some of those and like yeah. work those into our like weekly meals. But I truly enjoy like the process of like making crispy tofu. Like, you know, I enjoy like pressing it. I like enjoy the whole process of it. And I think that like I said, in order for it to be sustainable, you really do have to have a passion yeah. for like cooking and investing time in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that I remember like a couple years ago now, I was going to an office because my iron was like dipping down low. It's also had to do with the fact that I was overtraining and mm-hmm. I live and train at very high altitude. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was also really, really busy in the office as well. And it was funny because I had one of the practitioners there tell me, they were like, you're always going to be leaving something on the table, like if you don't eat red meat like constantly while you're at high altitude. And I was like, well, actually, like my ferritin stores and my overall like iron values in general have looked vastly improved and better compared to when, you know, I was in my surgical residency and I was suffering from significant anemia. I mean, I remember like not really even being able to like stand up like for like 90 minutes during a surgery. And that's when I knew, when I ordered blood work on myself and my hemoglobin was like 7 flat and I had to have whole blood transfusions. Oh, but yeah, I was eating like red meat, like out my ears, like trying to get it up. And it just goes to show, right, that you can address these types of issues in ways that aren't like traditionally recommended. You just have to be educated about it and really place emphasis on things like timing, right? And mm-hmm. as you know, like separating things out, like when you're getting your iron, not pairing it with things like caffeine, calcium, things like that. But yeah, it's just interesting being told that. And it's like, well, actually, I've actually seen the opposite happen for me.
Yeah.
It just takes the right education and just investing in that.
Right. And again, hopefully I didn't sound like a downer when I was like, oh, it's a lot of work.
No.
I more just wanted, I think from an athlete perspective, because right. going back to what we were saying before mm-hmm. about the importance of like fueling enough, I think that the switch between, oh, I want to be more plant focused can lead to a lot of athletes to under fueling. And we don't want that.
Yes.
And you don't right. want that. And right. so it's okay. Now it's almost like if you were, and I could be wrong about this, I'm generalizing here, but I think non-athletes mm-hmm. making that switch to plant-based might be a little easier because they have a little more wiggle room, you know, there, it doesn't
totally, yeah,
you know, but okay, now I'm performing at a high level and expecting to go train. I need my iron up high. Like,
yep,
I need enough. I need those extra snacks. I need those extra calories. So
yeah,
that's where being knowledgeable is so helpful. And especially an athlete at your level. But again, it was a personal choice, one supported by your husband, one that you guys mm-hmm. talked a lot about, one that wasn't completely unfamiliar, and one that you are educated on about how to make and passionate about. Like, you enjoy cooking.
Yeah, truly. Like, anytime I have like athletes of my own reach out to me about wanting to make the switch, I'm always, of course, like excited and like very supportive. But the first thing I do mention is that like, this is, it's going to take work. And usually my biggest concern is like, I like to ease them into it because I want to be sure that they're first and foremost meeting their caloric needs. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was something for me that ironically, like when my husband and I did make the switch, we were actually consuming a lot more protein than we were previously, just because we weren't really eating very much meat to begin with.
Yeah.
So it, for us, it was a little, it was just kind of ironic.
It's almost like you're, do you feel like your diet improved when you made the quote official switch?
Vastly. Vastly. And I think there's a lot to be said too about what you mentioned. Like, I finally, like, I just feel like I'm living in tandem with my values. Mm-hmm. And there's something really to be said about that when you just feel like the decisions I'm making here are really like true to who I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just think when you make decisions like that, like whether it's diet or anything related, it really contributes to your success, right?
Absolutely.
Because you're truly living genuinely and in alignment with who you want to be.
Absolutely. I love that. And you said it perfectly. And so I love how you mentioned too, actually, when you maybe before when you were just like, I don't really like meat, but you weren't mm-hmm. intentionally vegan. So you weren't getting right. that much protein. And then when you were intentionally vegan, you got more protein in.
Oh, yeah.
What are I just would like to maybe if you could just share with our listeners, like how are some ways that you get protein in or focus on protein on a vegan diet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I place a huge, huge emphasis on protein. Like, even like you mentioned, right? Like the example of making like vegan mac and cheese, there are tons of different ways to do it. I'm someone who, when I go to the milk section at the grocery store, I'm always choosing the highest protein option. Mm-hmm. So almond milk is wonderful. I love how it tastes, but sadly, it's not very, yep, there's no protein in it. Same thing with cashew milk. So I'm always reaching for soy milk. Like Ripple, like a pea protein based milk. I don't tend to reach for, like I use like oat milk, like creamer, but I really try to choose like always the highest protein option there. That's yeah. a really easy way. And I always make sure that I have a good mixture of like the or like unsweetened so that I can use that in like savory creams, like sauces and yeah. things. So I always have that on hand. And then of course, like I have like a sweeter option if I'm eating that with cereal or mm-hmm. something like that. But yeah, that's like a very easy way to just ensure that you're bolstering your protein intake. I also reach for high like protein veggies too. So I always have like I don't know. Anytime we go to the grocery store, I'm telling my husband like grab like 5 or 6 bags of like frozen like unshelled edamame.
Yeah. yeah.
It's high protein. I love throwing that in. You're still getting greens. And again, like if you're pairing that, like I make like crispy tofu like probably 3 to 4 times a week. Mm-hmm. Same thing with tempeh. And then you're adding like, you know, two-thirds cups of edamame. It's just like you can easily reach like a 40 gram protein meal right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And same thing, like you mentioned with like different pastas. I also try to reach for things like red lentil, bean-based pastas like bonza. Barilla has like a protein option as yeah. well, which is great. It's not gluten-free for those who have gluten issues, but yeah, I'm always like scanning and seeing like, okay, like how can I up the protein a little bit more? But yeah, I feel like it's just like those like small little things. And I don't tend to count my macros anymore. But when I was sort of like initially making the switch, I was keeping an eye on that very closely just to be sure that I was meeting my needs.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say like, you know, I'm not a very large person. I haven't grown since I was like 12 years old. So I'm like 5'1.5", mm-hmm. around like 100 to 105 pounds. But on a daily basis, I'm confident in saying that I probably consume about 120 grams of protein per day on yeah. a purely vegan, plant-based diet.
Yeah.
I do, I'm a proponent of, you know, utilizing like protein shakes as needed. I probably drink one of those once a day or one every other day or so and reaching for like a pea protein-based option. But I wouldn't say that I like purely rely on those either. I get the bulk of my protein from whole food sources. Whole foods,
yeah. But it's a great option to have too. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
This is a boom. The pea protein is a boom right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Between pea protein powders, pea protein milks, and then it's like just in products.
Yeah. Yeah. I even love like also having like bags of like frozen peas on hand for like pea like pesto and things that. It's a great option. Like avocados can be expensive. I'm here in Colorado, so they're not always accessible to make like avocado toast. Mm-hmm. But you can make really like very similar using like peas, mashed like pea toast.
Yeah.
Mashed peas. Yeah. 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 And it like it's just making little decisions like that that it can really up your protein intake throughout the day.
Were there any resources that you went to start mm-hmm. like books or cookbooks or anything that you found yeah. really helpful? Because it's just from a cooking perspective, you just have to think outside the box.
It's like, where do you start?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I think as a dietitian, and again, I'm not vegan, so I don't have all of it, but I'm like, oh yeah, I've heard of peas on toast before. Like that makes sense to me just because I mm-hmm. love a variety of foods and it's my career. But somebody else is probably like, what? Peas on toast yeah. for breakfast? But it's like, how do you open your mind to all the possibilities?
Yeah, I think the most helpful like tip that I would have for folks like wanting to build in more plant-based and vegan meals, or if you're wanting to make the switch altogether, is I think I made a list of like foods that I really, really enjoy eating, like my favorite foods, whether that's like comfort food or just foods that I tend to gravitate towards. you know, like growing up, I know my mom would like always make like my favorite like scrambled eggs, like with like cheese, some veggies in it and like tater tots. Mm-hmm. And so like that's like a comfort meal for me. And I, you know, I would make that or something similar, like some sort of like scramble for my husband and I, like over the weekends after long runs. So I would write down like different meals like that. And then I would just like go online and like search like how to like make those meals vegan.
Yeah.
Right. And then I quickly learned, okay, like I can make like a tofu scramble and these are all the ingredients that I need for it. So I started like sort of stockpiling lists of things like you've already mentioned, things like nutritional yeast, huge bang for your buck in terms of protein. I think like two like heaping tablespoons has like an enormous, like it has like 8 grams of protein. Don't quote me on that, but it's like somewhere similar for not like a very high, like a high amount of the product. So things like nutritional yeast, like I quickly learned to like having like raw cashews on hand to like soak if you want to make, you know, like soups or things like that a little bit more creamy. Yeah. And yeah, like always having different types of tofu on hand. But yeah, I really just made a list of foods that and meals that I enjoyed. And then I just sort of researched how to make them vegan and the different ways. And like you mentioned, like how to maximize the protein within it. And yeah, but like I said, I had the time at that point to invest into it.
Yeah.
And really, like once I started cooking vegan, it was like, oh, I actually, like I really enjoy this. Whereas before when I was trying to up my protein, I was always so grossed out by like slicing meat. Like I'm like, oh, I don't have an interest in like learning how to like cook a turkey or like a hen.
Yeah.
I just, it wasn't fun for me. But yeah, once I learned how to once I learned how to make just by doing, like I said, basic research online, there's also tons of like Instagram, social media accounts with incredible recipes out there. But yeah, it's like I said, I've had so much fun doing it. And I feel like when you're enjoying what you're doing, it makes nutrition less of this sort of like scary, like inaccessible thing to do. And I'm always really big about the fact that nutrition and my time in the kitchen, I view as training. Like it's a part of my training. Mm-hmm. And I don't really ever feel comfortable like pushing myself in a hard workout or, you know, going out for a super, super long run if I haven't also done like invested my time in the kitchen, mm-hmm. like in the days prior or in the half hour, 45 minutes after. It's sort of like something that I'm like, it's just like doing like a dynamic warm up or like mm-hmm. my strength work. Like I would much rather cut a few miles off each week if I know that I'm able to transition that into the kitchen.
I love this perspective. And I think too, I kind of have that too. Even just yesterday, I went for a longer run for me. And when I came mm-hmm. home, I was in a rush. We were mm-hmm. trying to head out the door with the kids. And I was like, I went to grab a bar. And I had this like mm-hmm. twinge of guilt, like, that's not good enough. You just went on your longest run since for a while. I was like, take the time. And I made a full sandwich and a yogurt and I just brought it in the car with me. But it was like, mm-hmm. it's part of my training.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's totally. It's part of it. And I just think that's such a good mindset. And if you can't, like if you didn't have the time, like then you shouldn't have trained as long. Take a couple miles off, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
So that's great. And I also just love your tip of what do you already eat and then mm-hmm. find like research. Okay, I know I like this. So what's an alternative way to make this?
Yeah.
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 I think that's great.
I think that's the best place to start like for vegan athletes, especially because I think like when we hear the term vegan or like plant-based, I think, and even like I've been to so many like really nice like 5-star restaurants, you know, and you go and if you tell them you're vegan, then they bring out like a plate that's like looks like it's meant for like a bunny rabbit or something. And
it's
I'm
just
like,
less food. Yeah. Cause they just like,
yeah. And
took
it's like
the animal-based products off, but didn't put anything else on.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, well, I still have the same like human needs and macronutrient needs. I can't just now eat like lettuce with like olive oil on it type thing. But I do think that sometimes like there is this viewpoint that like that's what vegans eat. And it's like just like actual plants.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we forget that like, you know, these like really, really like dense and nutritious products like tempeh, for example, like it is plant based, but it's, you know, it can taste nearly exactly like bacon, honestly, like cooked in specific ways.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, it's so great. The creativity with vegan cooking is very interesting. Mm-hmm. And again, as not a vegan myself, though, I do have fun experimenting. And you mentioned mm-hmm. like making crispy tofu. And I just, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? I made the best tofu of my life. I was so proud of myself because it all came to, I took the time to press.
To press, yeah.
To press. I always press, but I really took the time and I let it sit and I really pressed and it was the best crispy tofu I've ever made. And it just took the time. Yes. You know, well, anyways, I have one other question specific to vegan diet and running and ultra running is a lot of the foods you mentioned, even for protein, it's like, well, beans and vegetables have protein. That's great. Mm-hmm. That also really increases your fiber pretty high. And I'm just curious to know how that affects you as a runner.
Yeah.
There are so many times when as athletes and runners, like we need fiber. We all need fiber, but we might want to keep that fiber content.
Totally.
A little under control. So we're not having too many like bathroom or problems or gas and bloating. Like how does that, do you find that you have to focus on lower fiber food sometimes or has your body just adjusted?
Yeah, I do feel like my body has adjusted quite a bit in the past. Like if it was the night before, like a big workout or a big long run, I still will do this where I'll opt for like basmati rice, like white rice mm-hmm. that has a lower fiber content versus reaching for something like whole grain or same thing with pasta, right? Like I think I'll still reach for like the Barilla like protein plus option, but that one has a like low significantly fiber. Less fiber mm-hmm. than something like Bonza or like the red lentil options. Mm-hmm. So I will still definitely do that. I think everyone's unique though. For me, I feel like I can get away a little bit more with like chickpeas and like black beans. Those types of bases seem to be like a safe thing for me the day before a bigger workout or a long run. But I cannot do like a heavy like lentil based meal. Like if it's like a curry or something like that, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. The fiber is just a little bit too much for me. But yeah, I try to remain cognizant of like lowering the fiber content and choosing, like I mentioned, like something like a white rice mm-hmm. That's a little bit more easily digestible to pair with like crispy tofu. And then I'll usually back off of like the cruciferous veggies the night before as well.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great tips. And then you are sponsored by Goo Energy Labs as well too, right? So on your runs, you're still having those simple sugars to help with carbohydrate intake there too, to help fuel for your actual performance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think I've been pretty vocal over the years too. Like, you know, I've trained my gut to be able to tolerate, you know, about like 90 to 100 grams of carbohydrates per hour, utilizing like engineered sports nutrition that typically works well for me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I think in the past I used to calculate like calories per hour, but in like recent years, for me, it's just more important to pay attention to carbohydrates per mm-hmm. hour. That's what we're utilizing when we run.
Yeah.
So that's the number that I focus on and try to really nail.
Sports dietitian perspective, I think that's the one to focus on as well. In your sport, as we get into ultra, mm-hmm. sometimes we do get more into just the calories because you're just burning all your energy stores. Mm-hmm. But I would, in most other sports, we do all focus on mostly just the carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But yeah, but you've certainly found that rhythm of what's working for you. And mm-hmm. yeah, I think I wanted to bring that up with the fiber just because it's something that
it is. Yeah.
A lot of people have run into problems with it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, we can just have the russet potatoes, you know, tonight without the skin.
Oh, yeah.
And that's okay. And you're getting plenty of fiber on a plant-based diet.
Yeah.
To not have to. It's okay to back off before a race or when you need to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, awesome. And, you know, one other thing I kind of wanted to chat about too, and by the way, thank you for just sharing all of that like personal nutrition information.
Yeah, of course.
And kind of what works for you. It was super helpful. Mm-hmm. But kind of just totally switching gears. Mm-hmm. Again, we started this conversation with you being a surgeon and, you know, mm-hmm. a medical doctor, and then ultra running takes a lot of time. And I'm just like,
yeah,
how's this girl got time for anything?
Yeah.
And then I actually did, in doing my research, kind of did learn that you did step away from your practice.
I did.
Was it just last year?
Yes. Yeah. It was last April. You know, I think that really goes back to just the fact that I knew that I'd been I had been burning the candle at both ends for a very long time. You know, I think it's normalized to do that, especially in the medical world. You know, it's like, it's like frowned upon to take time away, you know, even like surgery centers and hospitals that you're on staff at, like when you tell them that you're going to take a sabbatical, even like when you're going to take time off, like, I mean, I really wasn't even going on vacations. Like the time I was taking off from the office was to like travel to a race and then give myself like a day to fly back and then like a day to recover. You know, patients, like a lot of folks are like, well, we need you back in the office. We need you doing this. We need you doing this. And it's like, I've been doing that for a very long time, not just in patient care, but in school and residency, you know, and I just think that I reached a point where I realized like I'm entering, you know, I'll be 35 later this year in 2024. And I just realized like, it's not worth me continuing to do this, you know, and me taking a step back doesn't mean that I'm giving up my medical license. I'll always have that. I maintain like continuing medical education, all of those things. But it's okay to take time away from something that you thought that you would be doing for the rest of your life. I always tell my athletes and my patients too that I'm really careful about like the way I introduce myself or the way like I identify, because like we don't have to just take on this one singular identity and go all in on that. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But for me, I just found like, hey, you know what? Like, I feel like I've been sort of training and running with like a bit of a handicap with this amount of stress and work that I have on my plate. And I wanted to give myself an actual shot at not being that overworked constantly. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it's in this like hustle culture that we see. And I also feel like it is trending more towards like, okay, you need to actually take the time for you. You need to take the rest. There's less like glorification of overworking. I think the pendulum can swing like really aggressively in both ways.
Yeah, it does.
It's like, let's just find like a good middle ground there. But yeah, I just sort of found I was feeling like I was like losing myself. I was just working nonstop.
Yeah.
And it's unsustainable. And I knew that. And I knew that the second, you know, like something major was going to happen in my life, that like the really strong foundation and pyramid that I'd worked so hard to build in terms of like all facets of my health was going to come crashing down. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in a certain extent, like it did when I lost my second mom, but like the grief was just all encompassing.
Yeah.
So I really, for me personally, like the decision to step away, it really, it was very simple, honestly. And like, it was like a no brainer to do so. Cause I was like, I can't keep doing this. I recognized, like I said, just burning the candle at both ends, and the fact that
a no-brainer, and yet it was still probably emotionally hard.
Oh yeah, yeah, extremely emotionally difficult. Yeah, it was probably
it's like, I know this is the decision I have to make, and yet it's still upsetting me.
Oh yeah, it was probably the hardest decision like I've ever had to make, honestly, in my whole life.
Yeah,
really difficult to step away from. Just relationships I'd built with patients and just goals that I had set for myself, where it's like, okay, you can't go after all of these goals. Like, you've been trying really hard to, but you're sort of watering down all of them at the same time. So yeah, it was a very tough decision, but it was also very straightforward. And once I saw a lot of mental health help and guidance to make that decision. But once I did, I felt like I had a lot of clarity, and just the fact that Also, it ties back to like living in alignment with like our values and who we are. You know, I never want to like bring up politics or anything, but the U.S. healthcare system is a really challenging system to be a part of, especially if you're someone who, I would say the bulk of all of us who went into some sort of facet of healthcare went into it because we care about humans and we care about keeping them out of pain, preventing them from going through like disastrous health situations. You know, it's just a tough system to be a part of when I felt like the bulk of what I was doing really wasn't practicing medicine. It was, you know, all the behind the scenes fighting with insurance companies and things like that, and all the sort of bureaucracy. So it was needed to step away and get like an actual break from that.
Get a break and get clarity, live in alignment. And yeah, I just thank you so much for sharing that. And the reason I bring it up actually is because I just went through something similar myself, and I shared it on the podcast for my 2024 update that I shut down most of my business.
Yeah.
Because I was also having burnout, burning the candle at both ends, like you were saying, and just not in alignment anymore. And you know, as I made the joke of, how do you do it all? You're an ultra runner. You're a coach. Right. You're a doctor. Yeah. How do you do it all? And sometimes instead of over glorifying that, we just need to be like, oh, wait, mm-hmm. she doesn't. And yeah, I don't mean yeah. that as a negative thing. It's like, wait, no, the reality is we drew our boundary. Mm-hmm. We knew our limit and we're allowed to say no. I think you and I grew up in a time where we were so empowered to do it all because we can. Yeah. And that's mm-hmm. wonderful, yeah. but it doesn't mean we have to. And
yeah,
and that's that I also say, like, when I shut down 80 to 90% of business, certainly 90% in revenue, about 80% mm-hmm. in workload. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really hard.
It was a really hard decision. That was my career path. That's what I worked towards, just yep. same as you. And yet, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. the clarity that I had, the relief mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that came in the following weeks was just like,
yeah.
you knew it was the right decision, you know?
Yeah. And I think, like Lindsay, your success too, like with the podcast, like you're following, like, on social media and all of, like, the clients and patients that you've helped. I think for me too, recently, like over the last few months, again, it comes back to this, like, okay, I need to give myself a little bit more credit too, that it's not just luck or fortune at play. I think for a while I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I had this complex of, like, stepping away from practicing medicine and really focusing on, like, coaching my athletes and, like, really, like, bolstering, like, my team and my roster. But like my mentor throughout like my surgical residency, he actually reminded me yesterday. He was like, you can say like all you want that, like, you know, oh, like you're so passionate about like coaching and like supporting athletes and providing this sort of, like, because I'm a doctor, I do feel like I bring a lot of that into play, yeah. like with my athletes and just taking that type of very like science backed approach. He was like, you know, your success as a running coach isn't because you're a great running coach. You are, but it's because you're a great doctor. And he was like, you know, you need to remember that every single decision you made has brought you to where you are. And it's not just like something totally separate that you've decided to go in on.
It's not like it was wasted. It's not. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I'm certain, like, it's very similar, if not identical, for you as well.
Thank you. And I'm certain of that as well. And I just think it's important to recognize, like, kind of another thing you said was that in order for you to, like, put 100% into, you know, the running that you wanted to, then you have to put more time and effort in to the kitchen. And then, like, we can't be putting all of our time and effort into being a surgeon either. Like, we're going,
yeah,
something's got to give.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what you didn't want to give up is going to give.
Yeah. I think it's the same thing. Something I think a lot of other coaches that I've, you know, worked with in tandem, and many of my athletes would say this too. One of, like, my sort of like classic phrases that I say is, listen to it when it's a whisper, not a roar.
Yeah.
I mean, and that can be applied to so many things, right? But I usually apply that to like some sort of injury that's popping up, but it really is applicable to other things too.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much, Stephanie. I end every recording with a few fun questions, if you want to play.
Of course.
If there is one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would it be?
Yeah, I probably, like, crispy tofu, yeah. honestly. I sort of, like, cycle through different sauces, but I do, like, a garlic teriyaki. I do, like, more of, like, a spicy, like, sriracha-based sauce as well. But that's a staple of my diet. I could eat that at every meal.
Yeah. I'm with you. If I make it like I did a few weeks ago, yeah. I could eat that all the crispy time, too.
Yeah.
So good. And my meat-loving husband was down for mm-hmm. it. So that's a yeah. good thing, too, even, yeah. you know, that you can woo people into eating more plants and you yeah. learn to make crispy tofu. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds like an obvious question, but you never know. What is your favorite sport to participate in?
Yeah, of course. Like, I love to run. That is my primary sport. But, like, funny enough, like, I did grow up playing basketball too.
Yeah.
My dad is a very talented basketball player. So I do love basketball, but I mean, I just stopped growing when I was 12 years old, as I mentioned. So that never really became a career option yeah. for me. But I love basketball as well.
That's awesome. And how about as a spectator? What's your favorite sport to watch?
Ooh, yeah, probably soccer.
Oh, wow. You got your hand in every sport here. Ballet, running, basketball, soccer.
Yeah.
Everywhere. That's awesome. Okay. And I know there are many out there, but if you could give a shout out to a female athlete in your personal life or well-known, whatever, that you just think is a role model that you want to give a shout out to for any reason, who would it be?
Yeah, I would probably say one of my close, she's a close friend of mine, but she's also been a mentor to me in the sport too, Devin Yanko. I don't know if you've had her on, but she's wonderful. She's had a like an amazing career in ultra running. You know, she's been at a high level for the last 20 years. And she's a master's athlete now. And I just think that's so impressive. I mean, I think she just ran her, I can't remember the exact number, but I think like her at least 50th like sub 3 hour marathon, like over the course of her life. She's just so inspiring to me. She's been like a guiding light to me, especially over the past few years, just in terms of reminding me of like why I'm in this, just to really like turn inward and remember that like this journey is about me, not about like others' perception of me. Mm. And that's so helpful. Yeah. And I'm really grateful for her friendship over the years. And we're also teammates now, which has been incredible.
Even better. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to have her on soon too then. We'll be sure to connect with her if she's willing. And and thank you for being willing. This was such a nice conversation from the medical side, injury, and then kind of diving into the vegan and cooking. I loved hearing your perspective on it and sharing that with people. So thank you so much. And we'll be following you in your running career and journey as it moves forward. And hopefully we can stay in touch.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Lindsay.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie. Please go check them out and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide. Or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new coaches toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.